Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
Today we're talking about Season 1, Episode 6, titled A Golden Crown. This is a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Pretty eventful.
Early favorite. Like, I remember, I talked about this in previous podcasts, but man, I was just like, God, this fucking Viserys guy's got to get it. He's got to get it. And I did not expect that the retribution would be so swift and sure.
It is.
And kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, real awesome.
I've never seen an execution go down quite like this.
Nope. And the thunk when he hits the the floor.
Clang.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ned, you know, finally starts to connect some dots here. And
sure.
He feels like he's been struggling with that for a long time. And he's got a lot of people pushing him in that direction. But
finally. You need a little milk of the poppy to open up his neural pathways.
Yep. Okay, let's get into the recap. We start off with Ned, who's been patched up. He wakes up to find Robert and Cersei standing over him. Robert commands that Catelyn release Tyrion and Ned make his peace with Jaime. But Ned wants to go after Jaime, and Cersei starts to question Robert's leadership, so he smacks her. Then when Cersei leaves, Robert commands Ned to tell Catelyn to return Tyrion. He agrees and asks to go back to Winterfell, but Robert says, no, no, no. And tosses him back the Hand of the King badge, making him Hand of the King again. It's been reinstated against his own will.
Where do you stand on smacking Cersei around?
Well, I don't like Cersei, but I'm not a fan of smacking people in general.
Right.
So I don't know. I kind of like it because Cersei's real shit.
That's the thing. Like, I'm not an advocate for smacking women, but I'm also not an advocate for women plotting the deaths of innocent, honorable people for no damn good reason.
Yeah, I mean, she.
That's what she's doing. She's essentially goading Robert into starting a war, or at least like, you know, killing Ned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure exactly what she's advocating for.
Yeah, and you know, they just won't, like, they're constantly at each other's throats, her and Ned, and they won't shut the hell up. Not that that requires a smack, but...
Well, and that's the other thing. Like, I don't even think condemned criminals should be put to death by pouring molten gold on their skull.
Right.
Having said that, super satisfying when it happened on Game of Thrones. So, you know, there's a lot in the show that has one questioning their liberal leanings and beliefs.
Yes,
so,
that's true.
But even King Robert admitted that wasn't kingly behavior.
No, certainly not. But he probably felt pretty good with it, too.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about here? I mean,
Ned's
really trying to get out of here, but
it's
working.
Well, that's the thing. Is like, I forgot that. I forgot that that King Robert standed strong on this, or stood strong on this death to Dany philosophy. I thought at the end of the speech, like, if you had put a gun in my head, I thought, oh, well, you know, Ned would have had his way. Because this was the big thing that he stopped being a hand about, and King Robert says, well, fuck it, you're going to be the hand, and I'm going to kill the woman, the girl, and you're going to help me, so there.
Yeah, I don't know why Ned decides to that's cool with him now all of a sudden.
Well, he's also got a lot of shit going on, and he needs to get himself, you know, clear of it before he because I guess a lot of the Jaime Lannister being a fugitive from justice relies on the fact that Ned is actually still the Hand of the King. That is a crime to assault the Hand of the King.
Okay. Not a crime to assault the not Hand of the King.
Well, I mean, he did, like, I don't know what this world's sense of justice is, because I think there's a certain school of thought that if Catelyn had just snatched Tyrion off the streets and put and held him against his will, that you could come up and, you know, snatch the other guy across the street. I don't think Jaime intended to kill Ned, but then again, I don't think the Hand can act with impunity. If he truly did authorize the order, then...
Yeah.
But then again, maybe he can. I'm fuzzy on exactly where the limits of the hand when the king is still in the city. You know, I sure if Robert is out hunting and he did all this shit, it seems pretty open and shut. Yeah. Robert might not have liked it and could have undone it once it gets back, but, like, you know, what the hand says goes.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move. We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and we'll find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
So we go over to Danny, who's trying to warm up one of her eggs in a fire for some unknown reason.
Gotta set the egg timer. It's a good way to end up with overboiled eggs.
Her servant girl sees her doing it and rushes in to save her from the heat, but the servant is the only one who gets burned, even though she didn't hold the egg for nearly as long as Danny did.
Mm.
It's very surprising that Danny is not burned at all.
Those soft hands made of asbestos.
I guess so. Yeah. What does she say at the end of this? Something about him not being a dragon.
Yeah, he's not a true dragon.
Right.
Dragons can't be killed by fire.
Yeah, I can't help but feel that that's kind of tied into this, because she's essentially soaking this egg in fire.
Well, and the other thing
in her own hands.
Yeah, and we've also seen her get into scalding hot water without any kind of visible affect.
Right. Now, why wouldn't Viserys be a true dragon?
Because
isn't he?
It's not just the blood. It's like a no true Scotsman. If you behave in a way that does not befit, it's he can't be a dragon, obviously, or he wouldn't have been burned. Doy.
Sure, that makes sense. So Bran has the same vision that he had before of this three-eyed raven, and he follows it down into the crypts, but, you know, it escapes again, and he wakes up to see Hodor with his newly constructed saddle.
Ho-ho Hodor, slinging the gifts. So
looking super happy. Like,
oh, yeah.
Loving
it's Christmas
his
fucking
job
morning,
today.
And he's Santa Claus.
He really is. Bran takes it out for a test ride. Theon and Rob kind of discuss whether he's going to do anything about the attack on Ned and the killing of all of his men, but Rob doesn't think it's smart.
Can we make for our Christmas card, if we do the Christmas, I don't know if we'll do it like we did last year, but if we do, can we commission a Ho-Ho Hodor?
We should. Card. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
And then they notice Bran is gone, so they go looking for him. They're really pressing this issue with Theon about you're not a Stark.
I know.
You're a sad sack of shit living in your enemy's house. Like, oh my God, over and over again.
Yep.
Is it starting to get tired?
It had an extra dimension of kind of Rob, because he's always been Rob's boy, right? You know?
I guess so.
He's there to private war council. He was, I felt like Rob rebuffing him added a little bit more dimension to kind of like, you know, a little bit more pathos to their story. But yeah, I think I mentioned that last week. Like, wow. And that's the thing. None of these were complaints I had the first time around. I think right. It's only... Or when you already know, it's like, oh my God, I get it. But
right, he's not part of this house.
Since I didn't have that objection the first time, I guess maybe that's more of it's tiresome because I already know it.
Yeah, it just makes me wonder, when's he gonna snap? When's he gonna like hear it for the last time and beat somebody senseless or something?
I don't know.
Anyway, Bran, out on his own, is accosted by some people who are apparently headed south. Rob and Theon kill two of them, and they take the woman prisoner.
Where did this Mance Rayder again? This is like the third time we've heard of him. This is the first time south of the Wall, but these purport to be wildlings who are fleeing in terror from the threat of the White Walker. They want to get as far south as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't do that by... waylaying northern lords.
No, they should have just kept going.
Yeah.
Maybe they wanted that horse meat, that sweet, sweet horse meat.
I just feel like I don't really understand, unless these guys are just, I don't understand why they looked like they were well, you know, they had clothes on their back.
Right.
They had...
Sure they know how to hunt.
Yes. Like, why the fuck are you trying to rob these people? Wouldn't you try to stay as far away from little lords in fine clothes on horseback as possible?
Well, it felt like they were divided. Like, they were split. So, like, some of them thought, oh, let's take this back. Let's take this kid back. He's a lord.
Yeah.
Imagine the reward we'll get for this. And the other one's like, no, we're going south.
Yeah, the reward is death. The reward is death for kidnapping. Like, you know, there's no circumstance where three of you guys go into Winterfell with Bran and leave without Bran and a sack of gold or whatever you imagine.
No, I think they were talking about heading back north to deliver him to Mance.
Yeah, okay, that makes even less sense, because what the hell?
They're headed south, I know. Like, one of them is just a dummy.
Yeah, either go south or you do some pillaging. You can't really... You know, if you pillage,
both ways.
Yeah, like, you know, come on. Have you ever played Grand Theft Auto before?
Where are you going with that?
You know, if you're on a mission, now's not the time to be killing prostitutes and jacking cars. Try to keep those star levels low, man.
Right.
So, you know, if you're doing a mission, if you're trying to get south, so leave the little lords alone.
I'm with you.
That's all I'm saying.
They've really been doing a lot of foreshadowing with Theon and his archery as well to set up this moment.
Sure.
Where he shoots this guy through the heart, saves Bran.
Yeah, I think he made the right call. I understand why Rob's all pissed off and scared, and he's full of piss and vinegar, and this is a shocking thing, but come on.
Yeah, Theon did the right thing.
Yep.
Tyrion nearly falls out of his sky cell while he's rolling around in his sleep and decides he's had enough. He bangs on the door until the guard comes in and starts hitting him. Tyrion offers him gold, but after searching his pockets, the guard decides he doesn't have any, and he takes off.
Mm-hmm. This is pretty funny.
It is, like all these scenes with Tyrion.
I forgot how much humor is in the first the early goings.
Yeah, so much
like Breaking Bad.
Tyrion.
Similarly, like, you know, that's like kind of what you think of is this mix of drama and humor, and then that gradually kind of falls off in favor of the drama.
Right. Yeah, I can't get enough of Tyrion in these early seasons.
Yeah, good stuff.
Arya tells Syrio she doesn't want to practice today. She's got a lot on her mind. And Syrio takes the opportunity to teach her that she has to ignore her troubles, or her trouble, as he calls it, and be in the moment during a fight. And then he tells her there is only one god, death. And they say one thing to death, not today.
Which is a quote that is frequently misattributed and butchered in image macros. Because I think most people say... what do we say,
like,
to the God of
Luke,
Death?
Luke, I'm your father.
Yeah, exactly.
That sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They say it, and he, that actually that construction never appears, as I found out. I quoted that, like, last season. I had a 50 million people quote and say that that actually doesn't appear in a series. Just, and here it is.
What do we say to death?
Yeah, so, fuck off. That's what the actual canonical statement is.
Right. I do really love Syria, too.
It's yeah.
He brings a surprising sense of adventure for a show that should have a lot of it, but kind of doesn't. It's all political right now.
Right.
But all that adventure just is kind of embodied by Serio. I get the feeling that on his days off, man, he is out there just swashbuckling.
Chasing cats from hell to breakfast.
Right.
Now, the other thing is, I was truly shocked at how little Serio Farrell we're getting. Like, I remembered a lot. I feel like that there was a lot more Serio Farrell, but this is the second scene we've seen him in?
I think so, yeah.
Kind of crazy.
Second, maybe third?
Maybe he's in the back. Yeah, like, he might have had a really brief one, but it's like, I'm treasuring all this Serio. It's good Serio stuff.
Yep, me too. We go over to Danny.
Early Serio, best Serio.
She's eating a horse heart. She just eats the whole thing. It's part of some ceremony. And then she names her unborn child Rego. I think it's a little premature to start eating hearts and naming children here.
Mm. But she ate the heart. The crone prophesied. What could go wrong?
Right, right. I just think maybe wait till a child is born and is not like stillborn or something insane, and then then name it.
So
especially in this world,
I got on the commentary track that that Amelia Clark. This is a gummy bear heart with like Cairo syrup, drenched in Cairo syrup.
Sounds pretty good, actually.
Cairo syrup with red. Well, she says it's actually, it does sound that until you're just sinking your teeth into it and the texture and the stickiness. And it's like I didn't have to do much acting as far as the retching and all that. Because the other thing is, like, man, eating a whole raw horse heart, that's an eating challenge. That's some man versus food shit.
It sure is. I wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah, yeah, but no, they put a lot of portents in these signs here.
I always wonder with these chanting scenes, these ceremonial chanting scenes, how do you exit this gracefully?
Like, what do you mean?
Like, when does the chanting die down? It's like.
When she gets the last bite and she starts to throw it up, it's just like, you know.
No, he grabs her and he's carrying her, walking around in a circle, and everybody's going, Rego, Rego.
Right,
like, a month? A day?
I don't know.
30 seconds after the scene ends?
You've been in crowds where this happens, yes. Like, it just kind of has its own little life, and sometimes something can spark it up.
I guess I've done the wave at a baseball
or
game.
Or applause, like just a long, sustained applause. Like, eventually it starts to trail off, and then the speaker can either goad it, or they can quiet it down, or they're like,
Okay. Fair. I wouldn't think any of these people would want to be the first to stop chanting.
That's why it goes on for so fucking long.
Yeah.
Till your lungs get sore.
Yeah, Drogo. Drogo's like, nope, I'm done carrying her. Just puts her down.
They apparently eat the heart, you get a prophecy. This prophecy is about the stallion. She's carrying the stallion who's going to mount the world, who's going to become the Cal of Cals, unite all the disparate Khalasars. Because this is very analogous to the Mongol, the steppe nomads in Asia.
Yep.
That, they have several different tribes, and they all have, like, individual warlords, but this is going to be, like, the Genghis Khan and kind of unite them all, and all the
Make
people of the earth will be
army.
His herd. Yeah,
yeah, that's what Rob's on about in that scene last episode where he says, what's the bigger number, 5 or 1?
Right. And Viserys is jealous. And not even jealous, just kind of like he's seen a magic trick that he doesn't understand. Like, these people love her. Why don't they love me?
And he is jealous, too. I mean,
sure.
You got that right. Later on, he's just like, why does no one ever give me anything like that?
Mm-hmm. I will say this about the actor, because I'm sure he's a lovely person. but he plays this with almost a little bit of a childlike quality.
Yeah.
That gives it a bit of a tragic quality. Like, you know, again... If you think about this guy's backstory, he fled from his home while everything was on fire when he was 9, 10, 11 with his baby sister, and he's protected her, and he's been taken advantage of and scammed, and, you know, like, he never really had a time to you know, become a proper man of himself.
It doesn't keep me from thinking, man, it's real annoying, these scenes.
Oh, sure.
Like when he, later when he goes off before he gets his crown, he's like, oh, okay, well, that's all I wanted. All of this shit is just,
No,
I don't know. Danny's stuff is kind of the least favorite of mine at the early going.
Yeah.
It's just not super interesting to me because it's so far removed from all the other characters that I really like.
Right.
So, I don't know. And some of the performances don't help either.
Sure.
Although I think Jason Momoa. Jason Momoa, I think is his name.
Yeah, his father was orange juice and his mother champagne.
Right.
So,
he pulls off a really good Drogo.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I feel like he was one of the biggest breakout stars of the first season.
Yeah.
And it's kind of
still...
He steals
the show over there.
You know, and it's still crazy that he didn't parlay this into more fame. Like, I know he got Conan the Barbarian, which I still, like, I think he's a great Conan in kind of just an average Conan movie.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll get another shot with Aquaman.
Right. He's doing that.
He's incredible as Drogo.
Yeah. Viserys tries to steal Dany's dragon eggs, but Jorah catches him and makes him put down the eggs before leaving.
It's like, you can take the eggs if you can pronounce dynasty correctly. Dynasty. Nope. Dynasty. No. No, not even
Dynasty.
Close.
Dynasty. Nope, nope. You fucked it all
Don't
up.
Don't mind if I do.
We learned that you apparently can't carry swords in Vase Dothrak. I don't know if that's something we knew before, but...
It's one of those things, like, I don't know if it's like, maybe I'm about to pontificate on something that I not have a clear grasp of the facts.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's like you can't have bladed weapons or you just can't shed blood. And like, kind of like, you know, there's like the law covenant that the Jews were given, and then they set up like the walls around the law covenant. They're like, well, you can't work on the Sabbath. Well, shit, now we got to define what work is. I kind of feel like the blade thing is like, you know, that thing. Like, well, you can't shed blood, so you better not even bring swords in here so you don't piss off the gods. But,
yeah, I mean, Jorah says don't let them see you with that.
Right.
And then later on, you're right, Viserys is like, oh, they can't shed blood, but I can.
Right.
So it is a little confused. But we also find out that Jorah's into Dany, or at least Viserys thinks so.
What do you think?
I really haven't, like, there might be a slight whiff of it here. Like, I view it more as respect, though. Like, he's coming to respect this, what he thought was just a little girl.
Yeah.
When she came, the first time.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It doesn't seem like there's much of that in the show. And also, I guess what the fuck is he going to do about it?
This is the first scene that I've actually thought maybe there was a little something there, because, as Viserys points out, you swore an oath to me, not my sister, certainly not to Khal fucking Drogo. What the hell? And he's like, you know, does loyalty mean nothing to you? And he goes, loyalty means everything to me. Yet here you stand. Yet here I stand. I thought that was a great exchange. And it's almost like maybe something Jorah doesn't even understand.
Yeah, maybe.
It's like, look, man, I got this burning, uncomfortable sensation in my chest. It's either love or heartburn.
I've been eating a lot of horse meat. I really don't know.
I'm emotionally constipated. I don't really know which, but you just
literally
can't have
constipated.
I'm literally, I got horse meat blocking me up. Just a giant plug working its way through my system. And I don't know what it is, but you can't have them eggs.
Yeah, there's nothing he could do about it, even if he does. I mean, she's wed to Khal Drogo.
Yeah.
Good luck with that, dude.
No, he can pull the Andrew Lincoln, show up outside her tent with a bunch of cue cards.
Oh, that Andrew Lincoln. I thought you meant...
No, I'm not going Walking Dead. I Love Actually.
Okay.
Yeah, he comes out with the cue cards. It's like, you know, he right? can't ever know, and he's my best bro, but, you know... Jesus Christ, Andrew Lincoln. Have some self-respect.
Yeah, no shit.
Does the bro code mean nothing to you?
Stealing women in everything he's ever been in.
Or having women stole.
Is he?
It's the only thing he can do. Steal women or have them stolen from him. Or a fail at stealing. Because he didn't actually steal Keira Knightley.
No, I don't remember that. I've seen it once a while ago.
I used to love that movie, but the more I watch it, the more I realize it's like the worst thing ever.
Bill Nye's still great.
Yeah, true. There's one thing that movie can't take away from that movie.
Cannot. We go back over to Tyrion, who once again calls the jailer into his cell to offer him gold, This time he's got a bit more of a plan, he explains. certainly you know who the Lannisters are. Yes, they're very rich.
Gets out the chalkboards, Econ 101.
Right. They always pay their debts. I'm a Lannister. Help me out. And look, I'll owe you gold if you tell Lady Arryn that I wish to confess my crimes.
What I think is brilliant about Peter Dinklage here is that he's playing a very smart character who knows the smart thing is to not talk down to this character, but yet
right.
That's what he does, and he's trying desperately to find the line between you know, telling this guy what a fool he is, but not letting him know he's a fool and not getting beat by the baton and also getting to do what he wants. And it's like he's just skewered on this pin that he's trying to wiggle around.
Yeah, I love it.
I understand that the concept of ownership is a nebulous thing. so good. So good.
Right, and he's, you know, patronizing him. Just sure. Say, oh, that's because you're a smart man.
Yes, yes. Yeah, no, and the look on his face when he's doing it, that's the thing. That's why Tyrion's such a great character.
Yep. So they call Tyrion in to confess his crimes. He does. He confesses all the crimes he's actually committed, but he still denies any involvement in Jon Arryn's death or Bran's leg troubles. This angers Lysa, who's ready to kill him. He demands a trial, though, and Lysa opens the moon door to scare him and agrees to let Robin judge Tyrion, which would not go well for Tyrion. Robin's just itching to get somebody out that
right.
moon door.
Right. Yeah, he'd be...
See the bad man fly.
He would get eye into his debates and just not throw him out the window. That moon door is pretty badass, though.
It is.
If you're going to have a near mystical sky castle, then...
Yeah. I do love how... You know, the Eyrie's themed, right?
Sure.
Themed with all these different sky punishments.
Yeah, got to. But also, just, you know, man, Tyrion's story, just his confession is really funny.
I love it.
I forgot about all the stuff about milking his eel and making a bald man cry and his sister's eating it, which, gross, but also kind of a Lannister thing.
And then when he's like, I once took a jackass and a honeycomb into a brothel.
Yeah.
And more she's like, enough.
On, yes, yes.
And Robin's like, what happens next?
Right. And more to come on that if you're a Robin Arryn, curious like he is.
You know, he might have been able to talk his way out of this.
You think so?
I think he could have entertained Robin enough for him to forget about this moon door if he just did a straight up trial.
Mm. But then all of his mom's got to do is flop out her tit and say he's a bad man, and then he's right back in the hawk again.
We can make him fly.
Hard to talk your way out of the sugar tit.
Right. So instead, Tyrion demands a trial by combat. Pretty much everyone in the room volunteers to be Lysa's champion, but there's really not anyone except for this guy in the back who we've seen a couple of times before.
Sure. He's the one
who's willing to be Tyrion's
sold his
champion.
Bed. He's the one that is talking about how he can impregnate the Eyrie.
Right.
He's the one that was distinguished himself in acts of badassery with when the Mountain Tribe attacked. He's good to like the cut of his jib.
Yeah, no, he seems like a cool character. Anything else on this scene?
Nope.
Okay, we go over to the King, Renly, Lancel.
Are we talking about him
Sir
demanding Jaime as a champion?
Oh, right, yeah.
Which I remember.
And she's like, nah, he's weeks away.
Yeah, when I first saw that, I'm like, fuck yeah, we're going to see real fight to the death of Jaime, and then instantly shut down.
I wonder
also,
if Tyrion has used
horseshit.
This before.
That's, yeah, no kidding. Like, is there any crime that Tyrion, I mean, that's the loophole in, like, the Mountain can essentially just, get out of jail free anytime he wants.
So, I forget that this is kind of the introduction to the trial by combat for everyone, right? Like, this is the first time you hear about it in the series.
Yes.
Maybe we should talk a little bit about that, because I've always found that to be a ridiculous concept. The idea that you could, be proven innocent, I guess, by killing someone.
Right.
And that you don't even have to do it yourself. You can nominate a proxy.
Well, I mean, so, you know, it only works even a little bit if you believe, well, I mean, I guess it works ultimately if you believe that, number one, the gods exist. Number two, they give a shit about what you're doing. And number three, they have human senses of justice.
What do you mean by that? Because I find that idea preposterous, that there's any justice in this whatsoever.
That's what I'm saying. But like, if you believe that the gods do, then they can manipulate the events to get their correct outcome. Like, you know, you could put a sword in your hand and he could beat the mountain. And you could beat the mountain if the gods are on your side. Because I guess the fourth implicit exception are for the gods are in control. at, like, you know, all levels of reality. If you don't buy into any one of those things, then this thing all falls apart.
This seems...
I was going to say, the other thing is from, you know, once you look at it from a humanistic point of view, I mean, even combat against, you know, lord against lord is stupid, but it essentially makes, there's no way that a common man could ever bring a grievance against a lord.
Exactly.
Because a lord's gonna have castle fort steel and plate armor, and you're going to have a pitchfork, so fuck you.
Right. And not only do they have that, but they have the absolute best fighters in the land, because the penalty for not being the champion would probably be death.
Sure.
Like, oh, you wouldn't defend my sibling or my son or my daughter or my wife against the claim. Well, now you're dead too.
Well, and all the best fighters are looking to distinguish themselves and get lands and favors and whatnot. So, like, it's a pretty strong...
It's so stacked against anybody but the lords.
It's an absurd concept for justice.
Completely. yeah, and I've always felt that way.
Although, in this universe where there may or may not be actual gods with magic powers, maybe it's not so absurd.
Yeah, but, I mean, Tyrion, you know, having a brother who's an excellent swordsman is...
Right.
Even better off, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that in this particular trial of combat, Tyrion was innocent.
Right.
So the correct outcome was achieved.
Uh-huh. No, I agree. It's just, you couldn't guarantee that.
Who are we to argue with its justice? The correct result, it doesn't matter. The process, the result is all that matters.
So we go over to the woods, and the king, Renly, Lancel, and Ser Barristan Selmy are trotting through them, while Robert's kind of recounting his days of battle and sexual conquest, and he's teasing Renly for not being manly enough.
Have you ever made the eight, Jim?
I have not made the eight. No, I think I'm missing a Riverlands
girl.
Oh. Yeah. Renly questions how great those days actually were.
Sure.
And then he stomps off, and Lancel gives the king some more wine.
Because this is the whole thing. I mean, a lot going on here, this Renly. This is this is part of his talk with Loras. It's part of him having to play this role, you know, where he's trying to play this role where he's an Uberman like his brother, even though he is a gay man, which apparently the realm would see as less than. So this is a big argument in the making, and it kind of takes Robert by surprise.
Yeah. A little bit.
You know, his brother's probably been the, you know, joshing and easy to get along with and easygoing. And then now he's, you know, what the fuck? I'm having a bad time here. The only reason I'm out on this goddamn boar hunt is because Ned's pissed me off, and so is my wife.
And
the
you're
queen.
Too fat to joust.
I'm too fat to joust, so I got to kill something. Might as well, you know, pig on pig combat.
Right.
And, you know, Selmy, kind of, I like to continue the characterization of him where he's just kind of, you know, I guess cajoling the king.
Yeah.
You can tell Selmy's not the kind of guy who's going to make the eight or do, like, you know, he's probably not into bragging about bloodshed.
No, I don't believe I have or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. We go to some people coming to Ned, who's kind of the interim king.
Oh, the other, did you point out that Lancel is, like, offering Robert wine at every opportunity? Okay, I want to make sure we got that in.
Yeah, yeah, he says, here, you should have more wine after he has his argument with Renly.
Right, because that's the other reason why I kind of got the idea that maybe Robert's more Robert than usual.
Yeah.
Because he's in his cups.
Yep. So people come to Ned. I don't know who these people are, but Ned's the interim king, and they have their stories of some dudes marauding through their lands, killing, pillaging, leaving fish behind.
Well, it's not all bad then, you know. Sure, your crops got burnt, but you got a sack full of fish.
Yeah, Jesus did that too. they describe an enormous man cutting the head off a horse, and Littlefinger makes a connection to the mountain and also to Tywin, who he says the mountain has been described as Tywin's mad dog. Is that right? Tywin's lap dog? Tywin's
mad dog.
Big, scary dog?
Yeah.
He suggested the Lannisters might be getting even for Catelyn taking Tyrion. And then Ned tells this guy named Beric Dondarrion to take 100 men to the mountain's keep and bring him to justice.
It'll take about that many.
Yeah, I think so. Condemning him to death. And he also tells Pycelle to contact Tywin and demand that he report to King's Landing within a fortnight or be branded a traitor to the crown. He proclaims a lot of sweeping shit right here.
And this is legit badass. Like, yeah. I remember watching this and being like, fuck yes, Ned Stark.
Here's justice.
Robert's out hunting boars. This is the way it should be. Just let him stay out there hunting boars and fucking right. whores.
That's all he wants to do anyway.
Yeah, have Ned with a strong, even, steady hand moving the realm forward.
And a sense of honor and justice. And I don't know. I think it's a good call. These people are very scared that he's making too many decisions without the king.
Mm-hmm.
Which probably rightfully so.
Well, you know, but then they're a bunch of lick-spittle toadies. They're the ones that have enabled Robert to get the kingdom in this. So you need Ned's strong leadership.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
I don't really believe that. I'm just giving the...
No, I think you need some of that. You also need someone who's going to listen to his counsel when they have something good to say, but...
Sure.
But, yeah, you can't be a... You can't just totally push over your council and...
No, it's kind of a comedy of errors because Ned's seen this council, like, essentially rubber stamp anything that Robert feels passionately about. So he kind of feels that their council is valueless.
Yeah, absolutely. Half of this council here has already told him, don't trust me. So
sure, yeah.
What do you want?
There's always that, too.
So the trial by combat begins, and Bronn evades Lyza's champion until he gets so tired he can't hardly move. Then he cuts him up and shoves him out the moon door.
That is a lot of blood.
Near
the shining levels of blood coming out of that guy's armor.
He put his sword all the way through him. Like, that's pretty
brutal
way to kill somebody.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. He's just floating like a butterfly, stinging like a bee. Also, I felt like this character, I'm just going to say, his name's Bronn.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
Fuck it. I'm pretty sure if we don't find out this episode, it's the next one.
I think I just called him that in the recap anyway.
Okay,
so.
Cool. I felt like he didn't really necessarily want to kill this guy. He's like looking at Lady R and Lysa like, okay, I beat him now. I'm slapping him with his own hands. Here comes the sword. fuck it. All right. And like, there you go.
It's trial by combat, man. It's to the death.
I don't necessarily think it is. I don't think it's supposed to be. Like,
no.
Like trial by combat doesn't necessarily have to be trial to death. It just, you know, I don't know. Again, I'm about to pontificate on something I don't really 100% know. But I've always, right. I know for a fact that I've seen trials by combat where people survived. I think there was one of those in one of the Hedge Knights.
No, that's called bum fights. You've just been watching too much YouTube.
No, I'm not a bum fight fan. But okay. No, I thought there was something in one of the prequel novels about Duncan Egg that you hear referred to from time to time where they had a trial by seven where you had seven on seven fight.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, it's like a fucking
But I've seen that.
WWE
I know how that goes.
Match. What?
The first team to lose a man just loses.
Right. It's
I've seen the team fighting championship stuff.
Yeah.
It's exciting for about a second.
Unless you script it turns out. It's, one,
Royal
being
Rumble.
One man down, it means someone get two on one, and that's a shit show.
Yeah. So Lyza's pretty disappointed by the outcome of this, but they let Tyrion go anyway. He takes his gold back, he tosses it to the jailer, and he heads home. He keeps his word. Lannister always pays his debts.
Pretty fucking sweet. And he's like... You know, the whole you don't fight with honor. Nope, he did. And Tyrion with his bow and is just tossing the bag of coins in the Mord.
There's so
pretty
much
badass.
In this fight. Like, okay, Bronn, maybe you shouldn't let yourself get backed up to the moon door if you're really faster than this guy and he's already half worn out.
Mm-hmm.
This epic struggle at the moon door didn't really need to happen.
No.
Also, yeah, he does fight real dirty, which I like.
Mm-hmm. But,
you know. There are no rules in combat.
There's sand on the floor, you're throwing it in the guy's eyes.
And then there's this moment where the guy gets cut through the elbow, or through the armpit.
Yeah.
And he stands back and he opens his helmet.
I think he knew, I think at that point.
As if to say, I'm going to get beat here, can I stop?
Yeah, I think at the point, like, you know, a lot of combats go, like, to the first blood. Mm-hmm. I think, like, he was thinking that, well, I've lost, but he was going to get, you know, I got the sensation that...
Okay.
Either he thought maybe the combat would be over, or he, at this point, knew he was doomed. Because, like, well, I've given my best when I was at full strength and I was healthy. Now I'm half dead on my feet, and I just took a wound. This is going to go poorly for me.
Or the actor was like, look, I'm about to die one page from now. Can I at least get a close-up?
Sure.
One final shot from the director's like, fine, open your helmet.
Right.
I also like how... I get the feeling that... Roderick, you said his name was?
Mm-hmm.
Sideburns?
Yeah.
was hoping Tyrion would die so he could like pocket this gold.
Oh.
I think he's... I'm not sure anybody knew he had that, honestly.
Sure. One little detail from the books that they don't really mention is that one of the reasons there's so many lords hanging around here is everybody's kind of angling for her hand in marriage.
Ah,
like all the prominent lords, and they're all, that's one of the reasons they're super eager because, you know, they want to be the next Lord of the Vale.
Man, even after witnessing all the craziness that is Lysa?
Yeah, you know, you got, I'm not saying anyone thought she's a prize, but you do get the pretty sweet castle.
Yeah, I suppose so. They don't have castles of their own already? Or keeps? Or... Okay.
Not a castle on top of a fucking mountain with a moon door.
Right.
Nobody got that. Not even Robert Baratheon's got that.
Not the Knights of the Vale, either.
He's got to cut people's heads off the old-fashioned way. I can't just chuck them out a door.
True. So hey,
these people didn't have HBO. Chucking people out the moon door, you can't underestimate that entertainment, the entertainment value of that.
I mean, that's right.
You don't get a lot of bards up in the mountains.
You got jesters, bards, and moon doors.
Just counting the days the next guy can chuck out the moon door.
Robin certainly is. My God. So we go over to Sansa, who antagonizes this Septa until Joffrey shows up. He apologizes for being a shit basket and promises that he'll treat her way better from now on. Then they kiss, and Sansa smiles. Fuck you, Sansa.
You're my lady now.
I just nothing good about Sansa at this point.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that her...
Jesus, I don't like her. Her wolf was
named...
Brat.
Her also, here's the thing about Sansa. Her wolf was named Lady.
Uh-huh.
This happened a few weeks ago that she was killed because of this little shit. If Sansa had an ounce of empathy or dog lover in her, as soon as he said, you're my lady now, like for the seventh time, she would have burst into tears. The fact that she doesn't tells me that Sansa at this stage is a bad person. And yes.
I agree.
Yes, sweet Robin exists in this universe, so she's not the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But God, just the way she's... Like, this nun, this Septa, is so long-suffering. Like, she tried... Like, Sansa's taking pot shots at her left, right, and center.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Oh, anyway. No, I actually don't care.
Oh, or I just realized I don't give a shit about your hair.
God.
Well, fuck you, Sansa, child.
I hate you.
Yeah.
I wish someone could drop her on her head. but yeah, I don't know. Joffrey, this is weird. Like, I guess it's later on in the scenes where Ned's telling his daughters they've got to go.
Mm-hmm. You guys gotta go.
Yeah,
this is all you gotta go. This whole attitude gots to go.
But we'll get there. So Theon stops this turnip cart, which has his favorite whore on it, Ross. She's headed to King's Landing because all the Winterfell business is drying up, and Theon tosses her a coin to see her beave one last time as she leaves.
Come back,
it's really
Ross.
All he could see is the bush.
I've got naught but turnips to fuck now.
Right.
Sure, yeah. He's like, worth a copper to see it one last time.
I guess.
That's the golden min she's got there.
Yeah, she's got the red... Is she redhead? She's redhead.
Yep.
But yeah, she's on to greener pastures.
Roz, see you later, Theon. All-time favorite Game of Thrones lady for me.
Yeah?
Yeah. Something about her.
When you say Game of Thrones lady, do you mean all-time favorite whore? Do you mean?
Oh, I mean
favorite woman, I mean, in Game
woman
of Thrones.
In Game of Thrones. Like, I'm just
really
just purely from a physical attractiveness level.
Really?
I know. I'm not. I've never been one of the Danny people. Are you a Danny man?
No, I'm not a Danny man. But
really, is
yeah.
it a spoiler for you to talk about who's your?
Probably.
Okay.
There are also just some randos who are extremely attractive.
Oh, that's true. I guess if you have that speaking line, because there's been
okay.
some, you know, crazy hot Dothraki women dancing in the backgrounds, and like
yeah.
sex position at Littlefinger's palaces are legendary. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Okay.
Speaking people with speaking lines.
All right. Fair enough. So we move on to Ned, who tells his daughters he's sending them back to Winterfell. Neither of them want to go. While Sansa's complaining about it, she says something about Joffrey being nothing like Robert, which causes Ned to take another look into the lineages and the histories of the great houses.
Right.
He finally makes this connection with Jon Arryn's The Seat is Strong and the color of the Baratheon Lannister hair,
mm-hmm.
realizes that Joffrey is actually Jaime and Cersei's son. That's what's going through his head, right?
Think so.
The hair color doesn't line up.
Wait a second. all of Robert's kids dye their hair. I love Arya's seven hells
I love him. I want to have his baby.
Oh, yeah, seven hells. And then Ned saying, look, when all this blows over, I'll find you something brave and gentle. I don't want someone brave and gentle and strong. I want him.
Right.
Oh, boy, do you.
Oh, it's beautiful.
So
beautiful lines.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is really good dialogue from the show.
Makes one wonder. Who put Joffrey up into setting the hooks back into Sansa?
You think somebody put him up to it, or do you think he finally...
It just feels like that there's the...
Came to his senses, because really...
It just feels like there's a trap that's slowly being set, and nobody can see all the working pieces, because, you know, there's just a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I was totally... Like, I see a bunch of pieces falling into place here in this episode, but I was totally overwhelmed by... Just everything going on the first time I watched through it.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, like, just when Tyrion gets away, you're like, okay, well, maybe the realm won't plunge into total war.
Right.
You know, what's going to be the thing that does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called Game of Thrones, that Game of Tiddlywinks. Some skull's going to be cracked.
So we go over to the Dothraki for what is the final scene here. They're celebrating, I guess, They're celebrating the naming of this child? I don't know.
The eating of the horse heart.
That's still going on?
Yeah.
How long have they been celebrating?
Ain't no party like a Dothraki party, man.
How many people have died?
They don't have...
Is this even a Dothraki party? Is it just weddings?
That's a wedding party. Okay. This is the horse eating party. You can't spill blood there. and even fucking Viserys, that's how bad he is. He can't even party correctly.
No.
Commits a party foul right off the bat.
Yeah, he does.
Swaggering in, strapped. You can't do that.
Yeah, he shows up drunk, completely drunk with a sword. He's angry that he delivered Dany, but Drogo never paid for her with the crown he was promised. Viserys threatens to cut out Dany's baby and take her back, so Drogo promises him a crown. And he gives him one. He melts down his belt and pours it right onto his head.
Question.
Yeah.
Viserys plays this cool.
If.
Imagine a world in which Viserys is capable of playing this entire situation cool.
Okay. Yep.
Does Khal Drogo ever keep his end of the bargain?
That's a really good question.
Because there's
I think maybe
not much. The only leverage
I think
he
the
has.
Stallion thing.
The only leverage he has is the fact that Danny's, I guess, whispering in his ear. Like if
right.
You'd have to imagine at that point in a world where Dany truly loved her brother, not just feared him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, maybe she could compel him to keep his promise. But I just kind of wondered, like, you know, it's like, okay, we're right after the wedding, fine. And then she got knocked up, and you got to wait. And you know, he's bouncing Rego on his knee. Does he? At what point does he like? You know what? We are going to cross the poison sea, and we're going to go fuck shit up in Westeros.
Yeah, I think maybe eventually.
Hmm.
Viserys is definitely not patient enough.
Well, that's the thing
out.
Is now that we know that Varys and Illyrio are in this scheme, you're left to wonder, like, well, what the fuck did they? I mean, they don't seem like fools, so they must have had an expectation. Unless they, you know, this was all supposed to be distraction to lure Robert out or to make him commit some kind of error. Like, you don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, they want to kill the kid, I guess, right? So, like.
But is that
what they
want to do?
At the very least, say they need to stall
because
he's going, like, he's going to wait to come over until the kid's born.
Right. Right.
Or maybe they're trying to make it, maybe they're trying to bring it about faster.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Varys said, you say delay, delay, delay. I say hurry, hurry, hurry.
Right.
So
I guess they're at odds on that point.
Yeah, that's just a two player. Wait till player three enters.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, have we got to the climax of this?
Yeah, he melts down his belt. Drogo melts down his belt and
broke
pours
his arm
molten
too.
Gold onto Viserys' head.
Forgot that little detail.
Yeah,
broke
that's
sword
really
arm.
Pretty minor.
That's the wind up compared to.
Yeah.
Wow.
This crown must be like half gold, half horse stew. You just dump it in the same pot.
Yeah, that gold never gonna be pure again.
No, that's hardly a crown for a king.
Also, like because none of this scene struck me as preposterous when I first saw it. Just fucking awesome. I looked it up. You know what the melting point of gold was?
Way higher than that fire.
I assumed it was relatively low because it's famously a soft, easily ductile. But it's like 2,000 fucking degrees.
Yeah, you need
what kind of campfire? It's like a blacksmith's forge.
You need like a belt. Yeah, you need a bellows. You need to get that fire fucking hot. There's no way that belt would have melted.
Okay. And that's like I said, it never occurred to think for that to be a problem until.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought about that when I was watching it this time too, so.
Yeah, there's actually
what are you going to do?
There was an article on the Smithsonian talking about the this scene and like what would be the actual mechanism of death.
Heat to your brain, like.
Well, and
it
I
would
guess
burn up your brain.
I guess scientists did devised this thing where they took like a cow esophagus, like or like the neck section, and poured molten lead down it to see what would happen.
Down the neck section?
Yeah.
Into the skull?
No, like you know.
Oh, down the back of its neck?
Yeah. And I guess, right. Like, number one, it completely blocked the esophagus, so you would suffocate. Number two, like, it instantly flashed some of the tissues, the steam, which scorched the cadaver's lungs and
right.
Caused a whole bunch. And also just the intense heat on one's head might literally cook your brain within seconds
it's
as well.
What happens to you when you have like a really high fever to times 1,000,
yeah,
right? Like,
right. So yeah, like when I read the article, cause it was like, you know, it was a long scholarly article. So like, again, the mechanism of death is just molten gold. There's not any one thing,
right?
It's not like a bullet entered your brain. It's like a lot of catastrophic shit happened to you very, very quickly.
The autopsy is going to be pretty easy.
But I guess there's like a historical precedent. There's several points in history where people had molten gold poured down their throat and whatnot, usually as a crime for stealing, like from a royal. I forget, there was like one in Roman times and another in medieval times. But anyway, I wouldn't want it to happen to me.
No, it's pretty fucked up. But that's pretty much it for the episode.
Didn't have to wait long for justice to come to Viserys, rather.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any closing thoughts, or should we get the feedback?
Let's get to feedback.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. Feedback. You can get feedback. You can get feedback. All the feedbacks at Game of Thrones at Bald Move. I get all the feedbacks. You guys send it in. It's a very, it's a force multiplier, let me tell you what.
Where's the feedback I was promised?
It's Game of Thrones at baldmove.com. Forums at baldmove.com if you want to discuss stuff with your fellow fan. You know, Jim, one of the most memorable parts of this episode before we get the feedback is Viserys getting a golden shower from Khal Drogo.
I think it was a golden crown. But...
And, you know, people might be wondering how we can give Bald Move a golden shower.
Crown.
And there's a couple ways you can do that. Number one, go to club.baldmove.com. For as little as a buck a month, you can pee on Jim and I.
What? And... now you've lost the thread.
And it helps keep us... podcasting for some crazy reason. That's what really, you know, it's different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, we sell that. Yeah. We sell that on the black market. You'd be surprised how much. 100 gold.
Yeah, you thought the bonus video content was like, you know, us talking about television and video game. No, it's actually just pee. You know, it largely involves pee. You go to club.baldmove.com. That keeps us podcasting because, again, cold, hard reality truth is we wouldn't be doing this if we weren't getting an economic benefit and if it wasn't for like-minded fans such as yourself pitching in and making it possible for us to do this on a full-time basis. Another great way, if you don't want to truck with all that the golden showers, you can send us a copper shower.
Yeah.
Where you go to amazon.baldmove.com and we siphon pennies, copper pennies, a little bit at a time. You know, a Roz romp here, a Roz romp there. You use amazon.baldmove.com. You get the same Amazon experience. Get all the same prices and shipping. It doesn't cost you anything. That's the magic of it. You know, you talk about a lot of dragons and blood magic and all that. This is the real magic. You go to amazon.baldmove.com and you give us free love just by shopping on there. It's insane. Those are the two primary ways to support us, club.baldmove.com, amazon.baldmove.com. Please help us continue on making these independent podcasts. First off is a feedback, and I somehow chopped off your name. I apologize profusely, but I will consider your thoughts, oh nameless one. They wondered, when Catelyn was transporting an imprisoned Tyrion to the Eyrie, why is Bronn there? We know he was at the inn. He was the one who gave up his room in a no-vacancy venue for gold coin. But is there any reason for him to be present when, one, the traveling party is attacked by the Hill Tribes, or two, when Tyrion asks for a champion after Lysa says trial won't wait for Jaime? Catelyn calls out seemingly a half-dozen bannermen in the inn to seize Tyrion. If you add a few of those now-trusted people to her traveling party, along with Roderick, that would seem like a large enough group to make the trip to her sister's keep. You're not imprisoning the Mountain, but a relatively non-threatening upper-class dwarf best known for reading books and drinking wine.
Well, they did know there would probably be trouble on the road.
That is that, and that's, let's just cut to the chase, because I feel like that is the key thing, that Roderick is not an idiot. He knows that the road from here to the Eyrie is treacherous, and it's got you have to travel through a pass that would have the mountain tribes that regularly kind of, you know, they're like the bandits of that area. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to roll in a deep crew, a deep posse, just to prevent anything from happening to his lady. So I feel like Bronn probably got into that, you know, just by being essentially a sellsword.
It could also be Bronn just trying to weasel his way into a pack of
of
lords and ladies, like,
right,
but you know, this can't go bad for me if I help out Catelyn Stark.
Now,
let's
the bard, which I thought his little beginnings of a song were pretty amusing, I don't think he's there by invitation. I think he's definitely a glomeron, like,
right, Here's where the money's going.
Well, it's a free country, and it's a public road, so I can literally not do anything to prevent it.
Right. But we know, like,
down a well. That's my only recourse.
Catelyn's got money. Tyrion's got money. Yeah. There's a lot of reason for this bard to follow the money here, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, he has some other points, or he or she, about, you know, what is he doing there after, you know, after he's successfully being escorted? Why would he hang around? But, again, I know it's interesting, because if you read the prequels, so, all about Duncan, the Sir Duncan the Tall, where he starts off as a hedge knight, which you've got, you know, all a knight means is someone anointed you as a knight, okay? Right. Got you down on one knee, tipped your shoulders, and called you a sir. And it has to be at least a knight that does that. Once you're a knight, though, unless you have a lord that you're in service with, you're essentially homeless. Mm-hmm. And you're sleeping out at, you know, in hedges. That's why they call him a hedge knight. So, you know, hedge knights and sellswords are always itching to kind of get themselves, you know, they're waiting for a war to break out or a rebellion or, you know, a tournament so they can hopefully distinguish themselves. I feel like Bronn's one of those guys. He's just angling, like he's hanging out at the crossroads, you know, where the action's at, and he sees this opportunity and he's going to see where it goes, pursue it.
The other thing he probably heard about Jon Arryn's death. And he might be there for the same reason all these lords are there, to try and win the hand of Lysa, right?
I don't know if he's that lordly, but you know, certainly.
But why not take his chances now that he's here?
I think it's probably more likely that he was trying, you know, there's where all the lords are going to be. So if he's trying to sell his sword into their service to get money, that would be something he could do.
Right.
Cody S. said, "What the hell are those women caring for Hugh's body wearing on their heads?" So that's the Silent Sisters. They're a special order of not Septas, but they're a special order that their worship revolves around the Stranger, which is the mysterious aspect of the seven-figured godhood that represents death. Mm-hmm. So they predominantly are made up of, like, widows. That's traditionally something, like, if you're widowed early or young or old, that you can enter into the service. And they do funerary customs. They have an array of arts, like they have beetle boxes and special boiling methods to render the flesh off a skeleton and provide, like, you know, houses with you know, skeletonized bodies so they can take them back to their burial grounds or whatnot. Hmm. They just essentially are, you know, the morticians of the realm. And since there's a taboo about looking at a face or at a silent sister in a face, because it's essentially like looking at the face of death, they wear elaborate face masks so you can only see their eyes. Hmm. And then they have the seven pointed star behind them, kind of, you know, just to reflect their holy status.
Okay.
Also want to know, did Baelish make the bet to confirm Renly's relation to Loras? We talked a little about this last episode. I think our take was that was more of a, hey, careful about how lippy you get with me or I'll out you, more than I'm making this bet because I don't know that he's gay. Because I don't see how him betting against or for Sir Loras proves anything about the personal relationship.
No, I mean, I just took it as this is a thing that people do. They bet on the outcome of these tournaments.
Right. Did Baelish know that Kat took Tyrion or planned for Jaime to confront Ned? That's a great question. I think you're supposed to be asking that. You know, what did Littlefinger know? Who's Littlefinger working for? Did he betray Ned? Did he keep him there? Was this all a bullshit show that he put on for Ned's benefit when he says, "I'll go get the gold cloaks"? Who knows? Mm-hmm. How and why is the bard traveling with Kat? I feel like the last question or last email we covered that pretty well.
Yep.
Joe from Germany, heard from our Air Force officer last time in the spoiler section, this time a Army Ranger. Just want to offer my perspective on your discussion of Alistair Thorne's motivational "I've seen some shit" speech he gave to Jon Snow in episode 4. I'm an Army Ranger stationed in Germany and a combat veteran myself. As much as I root for Jon Snow and his open-mouthed acting, when you hear Alistair's action, a lot of people are saying that Jon Snow's a real slack jaw in season 1. I haven't noticed.
Yeah.
Does he sit there and just with a gaping open? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. As much as I root for his open-mouth acting, when you view Alistair's actions and overall attitude through the prism of military hierarchy, I think it makes a whole lot more sense. For example, I had a young private new to the army who showed, if he said, for example, I had a young private new to the army who showed some natural leadership ability or quote unquote swordsmanship, I would still be my responsibility as a steward to learn him something. Mm-hmm. Alistair's growly antagonistic relationship parallels perfectly a crusty drill sergeant that you'd find in today's military. This is a guy who's been north of the wall countless times, has seen his fellow brothers sliced and diced by wildlings. As much as the viewer despises his character, one cannot help but understand his motivations from the jump. I think this is one area where the show does a better job than the book. The actor who plays Alistair, I think, brings a lot of shades to an otherwise nasty character. Sure, the guy has a lot of blind spots, but he's unquestionably brave and a capable commander. At this early stage in the show, I can't help but label his abuse of John as developmental to his future career as a black brother. Basically, he's knocking his little lordling down a peg or two. Anyway, it's just my perspective as a combat veteran, so take it for what it's worth.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have, you know, I think last episode when we were talking about him and this speech, or two episodes ago, whatever it was, we both pretty much were on that same page, right? Like, John doesn't understand it, and it may not be the best way. Maybe there's a better way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, he's obviously trying to say, hey, you're not prepared for the shit that's out there.
Yeah, that's, it's my funny job. Because my old co-host, Mad Brew, was a former Marine himself. And I remember, like, it's so weird getting this email from Joe, because it's like gave me a strong sense of deja vu having this right. exact same argument, not argument, but discussion with Mad Brew about the military perspective on this military sure. organization. So no, I think your viewpoint counts for a lot, and again, thanks for your service. So anything else you want to say, or should we move on to the spoiler section?
Let's move on.
All right, again, gameofthrones@baldmove.com if you want to send feedback for the next show. Also, reminder, we recorded this right after we recorded 105, so it's going to be you know, if we didn't get to any of your thoughts for 105, it's just because, you know, we'd already recorded this. So we'll probably have a supersized mailbag on the next one. Look forward to that. But if you're not joining us for the spoiler section, we'll see you in a week.
Yeah. And if you are, sit through the music. We'll be back in a few seconds. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. Bye-bye.
And we're back with the spoiler section. Anything in particular you want to talk about?
Just poor Roz, man. She takes so much shit from Theon, and then we know ultimately kind of what he predicts here, as big of a dick as he is, came true. You know, as she points out, there's not a lot of, you know, she accurately predicted that there's going to be war and there wouldn't be a lot of trade up north, and we saw what a shit show Winterfell ends up becoming.
Right.
But on the other hand, she gets tortured to death as Joffrey's plaything. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just like as I just felt so much foreshadowing and dread. And again, she's my favorite Game of Thrones girl. And it's right. just a goddamn shame, because she's also got a lot of capabilities, as uh-huh. Littlefinger exploits later on. And I don't know. It's a damn shame. That's the big takeaway that I had from this. Everything else, you know, like, shit happens in the next two episodes, but I didn't see a lot of the episode where it really cemented the Targaryens are fireproof,
right?
But also hashtag not all Targaryens, because Viserys certainly wasn't.
Yeah, and they really started hinting at this early. I'm surprised how early, like even episode one, of course, there was a small hint.
Yeah.
But then here it becomes a lot more prominent.
And as we discussed ad infinitum and ad nauseum, this is a show only thing,
right?
That George is on record as saying that, you know, the magical fire protection she has later on this season was a one-time blood magic kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Double D's decided, for whatever reason, and there's lots of good reasons, lots of cons apparently, you know, obviously too, to make it an explicit Targaryen trait, just, I guess, you know, make people less what the fuck, when it's more of a foreshadowing that comes true than a, just like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
So yeah, anything else? Like,
did Dany's father or mother fuck a dragon? Is that why she's she's actually a dragon and Viserys isn't?
Yeah, she's a dragon bastard.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Okay. I wouldn't be surprised if a Targaryen tried, because, you know,
yeah,
famously one drank wildfire. to try to become a dragon. One like burnt down like their summer home because he was trying to hatch dragons, or at least that's the theory that everybody tells themselves. So fucking it, I'm sure one of the lesser Targaryens fucked a dragon.
Oh yeah, it's like the zombie apocalypse. You know, there's someone out there who's gonna get it in their head to fuck a zombie.
Yeah,
you know it's gonna happen.
I mean, there are dragon shaped dildos on the market right now.
You're absolutely right.
Was it bad dragon? Like, if you had the real thing, especially those like stunted, you know, small cat sized, some of those Targaryens went about raping some dragons. I guarantee.
Absolutely.
So, you know, whether anything came, you know, half dragon, half men, who's to say? A lot of smart people have said that Targaryens fuck dragons. You know, I'm just saying there's a lot of controversy there. What are you going to say?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to bring up the Seat of Strong stuff, but now we start to really see the puzzle being laid out here and Ned making the connections, which, you know, later on get him killed. I think it's next episode is the betrayal of Ned.
And then episode later after that is him in the Black Dungeons and then getting off with his head treatment. So
yeah. It happens real fast from here on out. Like, he confronts Cersei next episode.
Does he get beheaded in episode 8 or 9?
It might be 8.
Huh. Because I know that everyone says that 9 is always the hammer episode.
Yeah, maybe it's 9.
But maybe 9 is where Dany puts herself up on the funeral pyre.
Right. I don't remember, honestly.
That could be the end of 10. Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see how this all paces, because I've always took it for granted that episode 9 is the hammer, episode 10 is kind of like, fuck yeah, next season. And that kind of has held true for the first 4 or so seasons, less so in the later seasons, but it'll be interesting to see how that's all paced out.
And they're really going hard into this Theon thing with him, you know, loving to use the old cock.
Mm-hmm.
But I never caught that in the first time.
I know, and that's the thing. Like, they really set up his betrayal of Rob in season 2 fairly well.
Okay.
And they also really set up the fact that he is this, you know, cocksure, ha-ha guy who loves his cock.
I never really picked up on that in the first watch.
Yeah. Well, I remember, like, you know, he had the whole salt wife thing where he was just, you know, having sex with some captain's daughter. And then he tries to hit up on his own sister. And, like, he does.
Yeah, I don't remember any of
that. That seems like one of his major character flaws is he's ruled by his cock.
Which, you know, Ramsay exploits later.
Hey, I ain't going to throw any stones in this glass house. So, Mario B says, while there's sufficient evidence for Ned to figure out Cersei's children are not Robert's, how could he possibly make the connection to Jaime's? Is this something in the books that leads Ned to come to this conclusion because there's no support for it in the show? I disagree.
He takes a look around and he sees the blonde hair and there you go.
But you're forgetting that, you know, Kat did her CSI Winterfell routine. Retrieved the blonde hair. Yeah. Realized, you know, that the Bran must have seen something, and then you got to think that
Tyrion's trying to kill Bran. Supposedly,
you got to think that, you know, we didn't see it, but it stands to reason that she would tell Ned all of her findings.
Uh huh.
So,
and we know that Ned, Littlefinger told Ned, "Hey, this is the dagger from Tyrion, and he's probably behind it. So maybe he's protecting his brother and sister."
Right.
There's some stuff that could lead you in that direction.
Yeah. No, I feel like that there's enough evidence that even a thick-headed bloke like Ned could still put the information together.
Right. And you know, as an audience member...
I'm saying partially in jest. I don't really think Ned's stupid.
Of course.
It's just something I like to say because it's funny.
But as an audience member, we should definitely be getting that picture now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we know Jaime and Cersei are fucking. We know the Lannisters have golden hair.
Yeah.
We know that the Baratheons don't now. We should have put that together.
The other thing is, I never bought... Does Jaime have blonde hair? I always thought that was the weirdest thing. Is like, if you're going to make it a big deal that they're all to be golden children, like literally golden children, like at best he's got dishwater blonde hair.
It's dirty blonde.
Shit. Like not bathed in months kind of dirty blonde.
Uh-huh.
And then like when he gets a haircut in later seasons, it's really ridiculous.
Yeah.
So
I mean, Cersei's blonde.
They could have put some at least highlights in there, get some root action. I don't know, but that was the one kind of what the fuck I thought is like, well, what the hell? He's not really even blonde.
Yeah.
That's anyway. So there you go, Mario. KCC, my question, what do you think are the chances that these foreshadowed couples become real before the end of the series? Are you ready to play Matchmaker?
Jorah and Danny.
Is that one of them?
It's got to be one of them, yeah.
We'll see. She wants to talk about Tyrion and Sansa. Margaery's speech in the garden about his attractiveness, plus Sansa calling him kind to Ramsay, plus Tyrion and Sansa being the reason Danny and the North join forces. The only thing about that is I always thought that Tyrion's a little old for her. I mean, she's supposed to be like...
What does that even mean in 15? This world?
Well, I know, okay, but we're talking about things that we want to see.
All right.
I am not a medieval lecher. I am a modern man who thinks that maybe a 15-year-old girl and a 40-year-old dwarf shouldn't live happily ever after.
Sansa's not 15 in the show. There's no fucking way she's 15 in the show.
I think that... I do believe that she is, like, very... Like, yeah, like, she just gets... Like, we see her get her maidenhood next season. She's not that old. Like, I don't even think she's 18 in the last season. You can all you want, but, like...
I don't know about that. Anyway, I don't give a shit about, like, modern day quibbles with age.
So you like Tyrion and Sansa?
I think it's good for both of them.
All right. That's fair.
I think Tyrion and her are well-suited for each other, especially now that Sansa's growing into an actual woman with intelligence and some understanding of the world.
I'm trying to think also if I don't like it because it was a forced marriage. And like,
obviously this time it would not be.
But what I'm saying is like, yeah, so do I, but I'm trying to analyze my own resistance to it.
Right,
is it because like, you know, is that a good or bad thing? Like the fact that like, okay, well, it's forced the first time. Tyrion was, you can't fault him being a gentleman about the whole thing. And, you know, Sansa's been through a lot and she sees like the good and bad of humanity and she decides that he's actually not so. And then the second time is for real. And it's like, I guess that's kind of a nice story.
I think it is. I think of all the people she's met, Tyrion's the only one who's been nice to her.
I think, you know, Peter Dinklage is a good looking guy. And, you know, he's like supposed to be a skilled lover. He's funny. He's smart.
Right.
He's rich and powerful. Like, what more do you want?
Yep.
A little less blood on a man's hands, maybe. Let's see. Arya and Gendry. Now, here's one I definitely do not like.
I don't know about this one.
My lady flirtations, plus she trusts him, plus the Baratheons need to play a part until the end, and he's the last one left. Literally. Last one left. Wow. Shit. I forgot about that. Like, because Cersei had all the other bastards put to death memorably. Here's the thing. I always read them brother and sister. Like, big brother, little sister. So that would be weird for that to turn into a romantic relationship.
Sure.
But that's honestly the only qualm I have with it.
Yeah, I don't know if Arya is interested in
sort
of thing.
Arya doesn't, like, she might say seven hells to your email here.
Right.
And then where are you at, Casey?
I'm going to ship every odd one. Here we go. It's going to be like Star Trek.
We're not done.
I know. This one, I'm shipping it. Yes. Let's do it.
Oh, this one. Okay.
This one.
I thought you had one that you're going to ship.
Nope, this next one. We're good.
Braun and the Sand Snake Chick with the nice boobs.
Oh, shit.
You have the jail flirtation, plus Braun ultimately needs to land the lady after all the Lannister promises.
Can we say stellar boobs? Like, she might be the one out of all the Game of Thrones women.
Really?
Yeah,
Sand Snake Jim?
I don't like her personality all that much, but if we're talking about looks... Whew.
You like the Sand Snake Pixies, eh?
I guess so.
Jail flirtation.
Either that or Marjorie.
Yeah, that's.
Marjorie's not a bad choice.
Not a bad choice there. Jail flirtation plus Bronn ultimately needs to land the lady after all the Lannister promises. Bonus, since Bronn is with Jaime, if this connection happened, it means Jaime and Bronn probably connect with Tyrion, Dany, Jon, Sansa, which brings Brienne into the picture.
Oh, my God.
That's my, like, Brienne, that's my ultimate ship, Brienne and Jaime.
Yeah.
As I always thought, like, everyone talks about how ugly Brienne is in the books, but, like, the way they always talk about Arya being ugly, too.
Right.
But then she's also favorably compelled to her aunt Lyanna, who is, like, one of the great beauties of the realm. And every time I hear they describe Brienne, it's like, oh, they're overly large lips and piercing blue eyes and, you know, freckles on her. It's like,
what's wrong with that?
Yeah, I'm like, this sounds like kind of a supermodel.
Right.
You just don't like her because she's a big woman that can whip your ass.
Yeah.
I think Jamie, that's exactly the kind of woman he would like.
I think so. They always talk about Tyrion being ugly too, but
he's not. In the books he's a fucking hideous thing. Like he's twisted and misshapen.
No nose, and
hideous scars and mismatched eyes and hunchback. Like he's like really rough.
Jesus. Okay.
Yeah. Peter Dinklage is a really Hollywoodified version of him.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I cut you off. You had one. You won the ship.
No, I was going with every odd one that he presented.
Do you mean literally every odd one?
Yes, like every oddly numbered.
Jesus
Christ.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go, Casey. At least one of us took your feedback seriously.
I'm just not a shipper. You're the shipper of the group.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Allie M. from Manchester. I've been listening to your ponderings for a few months, so I don't know if you've covered this already, but I was wondering if you could shed some light onto why the show's cast is made up of predominantly white actors. There are minimal Asians, Middle Easterns, or South American contingencies, and the only two recurring black characters are Zaro Zun Doxus in Season 2 and Aria Hota from Seasons 5 and 6. The Dornish characters are actually actors of various nationalities. For example, Nymeria Sand is half Singaporean Chinese, while Ilaria is Indian Swiss Italian, which comes across as if the producers just wanted people of slightly darker skin without actually having an idea of their heritage and culture.
Sure. That sounds right.
I understand Gurm based the books on medieval England, and therefore Westeros would be mainly Caucasian, but what across the Narrow Sea and the rest of Essos? Surely Dany or Tyrion would have met less people of white skin than the show portrays. Maybe Gurm is expanding his world. But as Dany is now sailing back to Westeros, will we ever learn more of the world's characters and cultures? So there's two questions here. One is a diversity kind of thing. And one is like interesting cultures kind of thing. Cause I agree. It's neat to see all the different types of cultures. And like in the books, it's lousy with them. You got the Dothraki, you've got the free cities, you got the slave cities, you got the Shadowlands of Ashai, you got all the legends about old Valyria, and you get just the barest, you know, apple skin of detail that bleeds across into the show. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as the diversity, I feel like we have a difference of opinion here, is that, you know, I feel like you're kind of like, well, it's supposed to be the medieval ages, and it's supposed to be kind of a representation of Great Britain, so it's not shocking that you have a predominantly white cast. Whereas I take more of like, well, yeah, but it's also science fiction. You have dragons, so would it kill a person to have, other minorities in there?
Right, and I always viewed, I guess, the Dothraki as a slightly darker tint, but, you know, not really. I mean, they don't do a lot with that. And also, like, the slaves in Meereen and all these slave cities, they're kind of all white.
Well, that's the thing.
Like, there was a big complaint about this in Season 5.
Well, there's also a big complaint in Season 1 where, like, you know, when Dany does her kind of, I guess, white savior scene at the end of Season 2.
Yeah.
Almost everyone that's, you know, supposedly from these slave cities that are from kind of, like, these Mediterranean cultures, including, like, you know, North African, they're all, like, 99% white. So it's like, really? Yeah. You couldn't find... But, like I said, it's interesting because Dan Harmon's talked a lot about this in his latest few podcasts, that he's kind of tried to, you know, make, you know, a more diverse writing staff and diverse cast kind of a thing. And he says it's really hard because when you're writing for your person, I grew up in, I'm not talking about Dan Harmon, I grew up in Minnesota. When I think about my life stories, a lot of them took place with guys like me. And then when I found that I consciously stopped. It's like I stopped when I was writing up character descriptions. I wouldn't refer to their sex or their ethnicity, but I'd write stuff like, you know, they're everyday. Like he's like, they're an everyman. Fuck, that implies they're man. All right, they're just an everyday kind of person that anyone could see themselves as. Okay. And invariably the central casting would send him a bunch of white dudes.
Sure.
Because that's what the culture says is the default. And he's like, you know, it's really something that you have to constantly keep. And if you want to make it, you know, if you think that changing that culture is important, it's something you got to kind of lead and master yourself and the, your casting agents and all that stuff to get them on board with it.
I imagine that makes it real difficult in a writer's room, especially because everybody has a different experience. Everybody has a different perspective. And if you try to incorporate all perspectives, I mean, you kind of lose a part of that vision, right?
But on the other hand, like, for I think Dan's purposes, he finds that fascinating because those conflicts in a writer's room can translate onto screen, and then it's more relatable and real. Whereas if it's just me telling my story of my slice of Americana, then...
But it wouldn't be to you, right? You'd be like, well, that doesn't match my experience because that's not my perspective.
Right.
Like, it's hard... Like, I don't know. To me, like, an artistic expression of a vision almost needs to be, like, a singular creative focus. Like, it's real hard to have all of these different perspectives and mesh them together and come up with something that satisfies any one person, right?
Yeah, and I think that... There's different types of, like, you got the singular artistic focus, you know, like, you know, to the ultimate extreme examples are like what we're seeing with Mr. Robot right now, or like season one of True Detective.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, those are pretty awesome, but then you also have more collaborative works of art. And I feel like that they both have their places, and maybe...
They do. And then none of this is speaking to casting whatsoever. And that is the fucked up part, is I don't know why you cast white people to be what are clearly... not supposed to be white people on the screen.
Right. Well, because they're lazy, and you're filming in Europe, and the, you know, it's a lot, you know,
but
like...
But lazy? I mean, nothing about Game of Thrones strikes me as lazy. It's so weird here.
You're right. It's not lazy. It's just like, you know, if you ask a lighting guy, the light is certain scene, he's going to go to, he's like, well, okay, this scene is so dark, and it's got this much material, and I'm going to need this much lighting, so I'm going to use this particular bulb, and blah, blah, blah. Like... It's kind of like it's the routine. If someone describes a character as such, like, you know, you describe an everyman, like, okay, that is...
Right, but, I mean, George Martin doesn't really describe an everyman with all these different cultures that he so intricately lays out, right? He describes a culture that's based on another culture whose skin tone we know.
Yeah.
Why, during the creation of this, are casting directors not going out and saying... We need a bunch of extras who fit the mold of the thing that he was writing to.
Yeah,
that's on them, kind of. I mean,
but also,
it seems to me that Martin did write a bunch of diversity into this thing.
A bit, like, you know, it's kind of like it's tough because just like J.R.R. Tolkien before him, you know, all the heroic characters are essentially occupying the United Kingdom.
Right.
And all of the villainous or side characters are from the exotic lands. And, like, that's, like, a lot of people would be like, well, that's kind of just racist on the face of it. Like, that's, you know, there's a lot of ink been spilt about that already. But it's tough because I think when George Martin started writing this 20-so years ago, he probably wasn't, even though he's a liberal progressive himself, this probably wasn't as much on his radar. Like, it'd be interesting if he started writing this now with his sensibilities now and the state of the world. But, you know, the art reflects the culture, and the culture shapes the art. So, but it's interesting because the reason I think, you know, people like, oh, Aaron, you know, Aaron's just, you know, up his ass with his liberal values. It's more like I like television, and I like this stuff, and I like to see the best of the best. And, like, if you went back to 1950s basketball, did you see the best athletes competing?
Of the time or ever?
Well, I'm just saying, like, when the league was 100% white guys, were you seeing the absolute best product put on the courts? I would argue not, because if you flash forward 50 years or 60 years...
I would argue yes, because they're trained to play. So, like, raw physical talent? No, maybe not.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if
the
you
best
let the black,
basketball
if,
players
if
on the
black,
planet,
if you
yes.
let the black men on the court, then it changes the game. I wonder, and I'm not saying that, like, you know, like Hollywood, although this would be super entertaining. Like, 100 years from now, Hollywood's dominated by, like... black actors and actresses and writers, and it's truly like, you know, what people are bitching about now, like, oh, when's the white man going to get a shot? Or white man can't write, white man can't act. Like, I that would be kind of funny and entertaining to me, because, you know, shit, someone else take the wheel. Someone else take the wheel. I don't think that, but I do think that the stories that you're getting from this diversity, like, and I look at, like, the Orange is the New Blacks and the Knights of, and some of the, you know, Stranger Things. You get that stuff, like, 30 years ago, Stranger Things would have been four white boys.
Right. Absolutely.
now you've got, you know, one white boy.
Or it would have been three white boys and a crazy Asian kid. Who,
yeah.
Like
who talked in an exaggerated Asian accent, right, and all that stuff. Yeah. It's hard to argue that, like, this particular cast, you got two white guys, a black kid, a little girl. Uh-huh. One of them's got some kind of, you know, one of them might be on the spectrum. One of them might have, I forget what exactly his deformity was. But that story is more interesting because of it, and more engaging to a wider variety of people because of it.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I think that's a good thing from a, you know, interesting, possibly like the Rubik's Cube combination of things that can happen in humanity. The more colors and the more sides and the more twists you can put in that, the better. So sure, yeah. That's why, like, you know, I'm more of a pragmatic, you know, I know I do come off of a flaming liberal, actually more of a pragmatist in life. And that's why I, like, fuck your medieval Europe. I would still like to see, you know, like, if you can find it in your heart to let dragons and magic in the world, maybe you can figure out a way of why there would be an interesting black character, an interesting Asian character in here.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think it's ridiculous that 99% of this cast is white.
Having said that, I do feel like that, you know, again, I also don't come down on the double D's because they're just doing the things that people have been doing for decades to be rich and famous in the industry. And I feel like they've gotten criticism. And like, if you compare some of the scenes of like Danny and her followers in season 2 versus season 5, they have gotten better. And you know, they read and listen to the criticism, and I don't think they're a bunch of fucking tools. They're like, well, fuck you. I feel like, you know, they try to do better.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, they got Missandei and Grey Worm. Is that what you're referring to with Danny?
No, I'm just saying, like, if you just look at a general crowd in Marine, okay, it looks more like I would think a crowd in Marine would look than, like, season 2.
Right, right.
Or season, whichever, maybe it was season 3. I might have gotten my seasons confused. But yeah, so that's what I think, Allie. Any other thoughts, or should we leave it there?
Yeah, let's leave it there.
All right. Thanks for everybody writing in. Again, GameOfThrones@baldmove.com or forums.baldmove.com if you want to send feedback and talk to the fellow fans respectively. That's it for this week. We'll be back for next episode 107, entitled whatever. I don't know what it is.
Titled Littlefinger Cuts Ned's Throat. Essentially.
I think that's the prelude to that. That's part one. Part two is the actual, maybe even part three.
Well, he just cuts it a little. He just kind of slices
next it up. Three episodes is just interspersed with a screaming Ned slowly being decapitated with a blunt spoon. Really drug it out.
Yeah,
really drug it out.
Yeah, they let the mountain chop him a couple times.
There's no way the mountain
he's got a really leathery neck. I mean, he's up there in the north, he's doing hard day's work.
I'm just saying, if you told the mountain, hey, take it easy on Ned Stark's neck. We don't want this to be a one-chop affair.
Right.
He would just one-chop it. He can't do it. It's like, I pulled back. What do you want? Yeah. I didn't follow through. So, yeah, we've got that to look forward to. But we'll see you then.
See you.